humanitarian disaster.
It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
From Washington, this is VOA News. Political turmoil in Burkina Faso takes at least one life. Sierra Leone now seen as the epicenter of the Ebola epidemic. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. Burkina Faso's army, which seized power Friday, cleared thousands of protesters from the capital Ouagadougou Sunday and opened fire at state television headquarters, killing at least one person as it sought to restore order following the resignation of longtime President Blaise Compaoré. Signs of discontent emerged Sunday after the military named Lieutenant Colonel Yakuba Isaac Zida to head a transitional government, as protesters demanded a return to civilian rule in the West African country. Mr. Compaoré's 27-year rule ended Friday after 2 days of mass protests against his bid to change the constitution. The Group Africa Governance Initiative warns that parts of Sierra Leone are facing a big increase in the amount of Ebola. The group, started by former Prime Minister Tony Blair, says an average of 12 new cases a day were seen in rural areas surrounding the capital. Appearing on U.S. television Sunday, the U.S. U.N. Ambassador Samantha Power praised U.S. and British efforts for helping turn the tide against Ebola in Liberia.
In Liberia, thanks to the presence of the CDC and the U.S. military, we see the rate of safe burial, which is a key part of the solution here, skyrocketing to close to 90% in the capital, Monrovia. In Sierra Leone, the rate of safe burial within 24 hours is close to 100%.
And Ambassador Power says awareness campaigns are now more effective than ever in all three countries. This is VOA News. A fifth doctor in Sierra Leone has tested positive for Ebola. More than 500 health workers have contracted the virus since March. About half have died. France says a UN employee suffering from the disease has been flown to France from Sierra Leone for further treatment. The United Nations warns attacks on humanitarian workers are hampering efforts to provide relief for hundreds of thousands forced to flee their homes in Central African Republic. Lisa Schlein reports.
At the same time as this month's unprecedented attacks against humanitarian workers took place, UN Children's Fund spokesman Christophe Boulierac says dangers have been increasing for the population across the country.
Across the Central African Republic, more than 2.3 million children have been affected by the crisis since intense fighting reached Bangui last December, forcing nearly 1 million people to flee their homes.
Despite the growing violence, Boulierac says UNICEF is rushing critical supplies to thousands of children forced to flee their homes. The World Food Programme notes the security situation in CAR also is creating critical obstacles to its ability to distribute food. A recent joint assessment by WFP and the Food and Agriculture Organization finds the crisis has caused a sharp deterioration of the food security situation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Kenya, soldiers shot dead 6 suspected members of the outlawed Mombasa Republican Council after members of the separatist group killed an officer at a Mombasa barracks. In another incident Saturday, security forces fought off armed men at a police station in the tourist resort of Malindi, about 120 kilometers northeast of the port city. Both attacks blamed on the MRC, which wants independence for Kenya's Indian Ocean coastal regions. Meanwhile, President Uhuru Kenyatta Sunday ordered all guns and attackers turned over to authorities in the North Rift region. The demand followed an ambush of security forces in Kapedo amid ongoing tribal tensions over boundaries. At least 20 policemen and 2 civilians were killed in that attack. 2 Malian soldiers killed by an explosive device in the country's volatile north Sunday near the town of Bouram. At least 4 others were wounded. Al-Qaeda-linked Islamists, who seized northern Mali 2 years ago, carried out a series of attacks since they were scattered by a French-led offensive early last year. Philanthropist Bill Gates Sunday announced he'll donate over $500 million to fight malaria and other infectious diseases in the developing world. The former Microsoft CEO told the 63rd annual meeting of the American Society of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene in New Orleans the Ebola outbreak was his call to action. The Gates Foundation is boosting its annual funding for malaria by 30%. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News. That's the latest.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Batte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burkina Faso's military promises united transitional government, but political leaders say the military belongs in a barracks.
We know that the political business is the job of political parties. For us, army cannot involve in politics. So we think it is better for the army to let the political people rule the country.
Arbor Kende is a member of the Union for Progress and Change political party in Burkina Faso. We have in-depth reporting on the political-military crisis in Burkina Faso. Sierra Leone's chief medical officer expresses concern about inflated Ebola deaths in his country. And a U.S. diplomat comments on travel restrictions from West Africa Ebola countries.
I think we have no philosophical objection to dealing with visa issues or travel issues if we thought it would keep the American people safe. But we think the better way is to actually increase the traffic into these countries of health professionals.
Samantha Powell is the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Low rainfall causes drought-like conditions in Senegal's north, and malnutrition cripples child development in South Africa. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The people of Burkina Faso took to the streets again on Sunday, this time to protest against the army, which the political opposition says is trying to hijack the people's overthrow of President Blaise Compaoré. The military declared itself in charge on Friday after four consecutive days of large and at times violent protests resulted in Mr. Compaoré's resignation. Viewers and Look has the latest with reporting in Ouagadougou by Zumana Wanago.
Thousands of people demonstrated Sunday in Ouagadougou. Some carried signs reading, "Soldiers stole our revolution." This man says this wasn't a coup, so they don't understand why the military thought they could choose the new head of state. The opposition had called for the protest. Opposition member Jean-Hubert Bazier read the declaration late Saturday.
L'opposition politique et les OSC ont réaffirmé que la victoire issue de l'insurrection populaire.
He says the victory resulting from this people's insurrection belongs to the people, and as a result, the leadership of the transition belongs to the people and should not be confiscated under any circumstances by the army. The transition should be, quote, democratic and civilian. Opposition leaders spent Sunday behind closed doors, meeting with the country's military leader, Lieutenant Colonel Yakuba Isaac Zida. Outside, demonstrations gave way to more of the confusion that has characterized this crisis. Soldiers took over the state television station and fired warning shots to disperse a large crowd Sunday afternoon. Opposition politician Seren Sereme was inside. People in the crowd said she was going to declare herself president. But Sarah May told reporters afterwards that the crowd had pushed her there and she sought refuge inside. She said she was not going to make a declaration. After Mr. Compaoré's resignation Friday, two military officers each made statements claiming to be in charge. On Saturday, the military named one of them Lieutenant Colonel Zida as head of the transition. Zida, the number two in the country's elite presidential guard, has pledged to hold democratic elections, quote, as soon as possible, but has given no details. He suspended the Constitution, declared a nighttime curfew, and shut the country's borders. The United Nations, the African Union, and the Economic Community of West African States sent a delegation to Burkina Faso.
Nous espérons qu'il y aura une transition conduite.
UN Special Representative Mohamed Ibn Shambas called for dialogue and said Sunday, quote, that we hope for a transition led by a civilian and in line with the Constitution. If that is not done, he said, the consequences are clear. He said they must do, quote, all they can to avoid sanctions and a suspension of Burkina Faso. The Constitution says the head of the National Assembly takes over in the president's absence. However, he has reportedly also fled the country, and the army dissolved the National Assembly. In such a case, the Constitutional Court could name a new leader. The international delegation said that the regional Ebola epidemic makes it especially important for the country's interim leadership to restore government administration and public services as soon as possible. Burkina Faso has not had any confirmed cases of Ebola, but neighboring Mali declared its first case in October. Anne Luck, VOA News, Dakar.
Viewers Maria Madiallo takes an in-depth look at how things deteriorated so quickly for Burkina Faso President Blaise Compaoré, who had been in power for 27 years, and what comes next for the West African country.
Days after forcing President Blaise Compaoré out of power after 27 years, thousands took to the streets of Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou, on Sunday to demand the military hand over power to civilian authorities. Some held signs that read, quote, "The military has hijacked our revolution," unquote.
Les plus grandes démocraties du monde sont gouvernées par les civils.
This demonstrator declared that the biggest democracies in the world are governed by civilians, not by soldiers.
L'armée est réservée pour sauvegarder le territoire national.
Another said the army's role is to safeguard our national territory. So, as far as I'm concerned, they've got to go, unquote. In Washington, Dr. Suleiman Niang, professor and chairman of the African Studies Department at Howard University, says events in Burkina Faso must be looked at in relation to developments in other parts of Africa.
We have to go back over 2 years ago when the situation was unfolding in North Africa. What was called the Arab Spring must be translated as the political Hamatan wind. From the north going south, it took this long before the Hamatan hit West Africa.
Niang says the Burkinabe youth are not taking action simply because they didn't like President Compaoré.
They are fighting because they don't want dictators who stay there, and they create corruption, lack of transparency, bad governance. They're not fighting for personality. They're not fighting for military leaders. They are fighting for justice.
Niang adds that President Compaoré was able to stay in power for 27 years for many reasons.
Compaoré was very close to Oufet Boigny and Charles Taylor and Fode Sanko. And his ability to serve as a broker, a peacemaker between the contending forces, legitimized his role.
Muni Kuda went back to his country after living in the United States for many years. He's the president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in Burkina Faso and spoke about what is happening in the country.
We are moving to a chaotic situation with everyone is trying to be a president. It's about time for the international community to step in and have things moving forward.
Kuda is also calling for the Burkinabe to rally behind Zida for at least the transitional period. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
The U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, has again said that she believes there are positive signs in all three hardest-hit Ebola-affected countries in West Africa. Ambassador Power, who has just returned from a tour of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, spoke on the American television network CBS program Face the Nation.
First, to my surprise, there really are positive signs in all three countries. In Liberia, thanks to the presence of the CDC and the U.S. military, we see the rate of safe burial, which is a key part of the solution here, skyrocketing to close to 90% in the capital, Monrovia. In Sierra Leone, the rate of safe burial within 24 hours is close to 100%. And CDC thinks that around half to 70% of the infections may well come from unsafe burial. So you can imagine what a difference that could start to make here, you know, just in a matter of days or weeks. More and more people are getting educated. There's social mobilization that's now stretching out into the countryside. And I just got off the phone this morning with the head of the UN operation in the region, and he's done a full tour into the countryside, and he said wherever we have an Ebola treatment unit, a lab, and social mobilization, infection rates are coming way down. Where we don't, they're not. It's that simple.
Ambassador Power also responded to a question on Canada's decision to suspend issuing visas to residents of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone.
Well, President Obama's message on this and his view on this has been clear, I think, from the start, which is that his number one priority is keeping the American people safe. And the best way to keep the American people safe is to deal with this problem aggressively at its source. And that is where our emphasis has been. I think we have no philosophical objection to dealing with visa issues or travel issues if we thought it would keep the American people safe. But we think the better way is to actually increase the traffic into these countries of health professionals and of people who can actually help with the response.
That was Samantha Power, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, speaking Sunday on the American television network CBS program Face the Nation. Today's Monday, the third day of November, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butter in Washington. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. Sierra Leone's chief medical officer, Dr. Brahima Kabo, said his country did not underreport Ebola deaths. Dr. Kabo was reacting to comments reportedly made on Friday by Ronnie Zachariah of Doctors Without Borders, who said after visiting Sierra Leone that he felt the global total of 5,000 Ebola deaths was underreported. Zachariah also reportedly said that Ebola wiped out several villages and communities in Sierra Leone. Dr. Kabo says Sierra Leone authorities have observed a tendency by some international partners to inflate Ebola figures for Sierra Leone.
Absolutely, it is not true. The easy is what we call probable death, suspected death, and confirmed death. And we only report those deaths that are confirmed to persons infected with Ebola. Of course, there are deaths that do occur at the community level, but what we are now doing is that we developed a standard operating procedure to ensure that whoever dies at the community level before that person is buried, a swab sample is taken to determine whether he or she may have died of Ebola or not. But I do not believe that we are under reporting deaths that do occur in Sierra Leone.
He says here that because he visited some villages, that the situation was catastrophic. There are several villages and communities that have been basically wiped out.
That is not to my knowledge as the chief medical officer of the Republic of Sierra Leone. I know MSF operates in Kailaun, and of course, you know, in Kailaun, situation has stabilized for the past 2 months. So I wonder whether he was referring to earlier this when the epidemic was in the eastern part of the country. I know general partners are in the habit of inflating figures. About a month ago, we also had a report from Save the Children saying that in every 1 hour, 5 people are infected in Sierra Leone. And when we challenged that report, eventually they had to apologize. Recently, again, somebody from the International Red Cross said every day in Freetown, we bury more than 100 corpses. That one also was not true. So I actually do not know why international partners are actually inflating the figures for Sierra Leone.
Dr. Kabo, now we hear that, for example, in Liberia, that Ebola may be on the decline. What is the reading from Sierra Leone?
Well, for the past 1 week, the trend that we are seeing in Sierra Leone, we are seeing a stabilization in most of the district except the western area, urban, the western area rural. Now, we talk of single digits in Potloko, in Bambali, in Bo, Kenema, except for the western area where we are still seeing an increase in figures. Yes, it is still on the rise, but definitely the way we see it is on the decline.
Where do you think, therefore, that the Doctors Without Borders official is coming up with these figures?
Well, the problem is when they go out to these villages, they do not go with any government official. They will just go and write any report, and we are not privy to even a draft of those reports that they actually put out. As far as we are concerned, yes, we know we have Ebola, but we know it is not stabilizing in most of the region except the western area where we still continue to register higher figures.
Dr. Brahima Kabo is Sierra Leone's chief medical officer. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. It's harvest time in Senegal, but low rainfall in the north of the country is causing drought-like conditions and endangering harvest of some crops, including the country's major export, groundnuts. Patrick David, a food security analyst for the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, tells Ricky Shryak that this marks a second consecutive year of poor production in the area and could have significant negative impact on the region.
In northwest of the country, there have been rainfall deficit, sometimes 50% less than in comparison with the average. That is definitely like a drought. Northeast of the country also faced a rainfall deficit and a poor grazing area. And that is very a big problem for the pastoralists.
How is this deficit in rainfall in the north expected to affect certain crops and harvests?
Where there have been a rainfall deficit, there will be a low yield, low agricultural yield, definitely. And even because of this late rain, it was not possible for FAO, for example, to distribute the millet seeds, because when you plant the millet too late, it cannot achieve its cycle. So at the end, you are very poor. So we've decided not to distribute the millet to the vulnerable farmers. I think there will be some problem for cereal in the northeast.
Are there concerns about food security then related to this year's deficit in rainfall
yes.
in the north?
We have to understand that already last year there have been some problems in agricultural production, and some households face low production. If the same households face this year a second year of poor production, a second year of drought, they will face a very difficult situation. Maybe they will be obliged to have coping mechanism, but sometimes not very positive coping mechanism, like to sell some assets.
And is the weather expected to affect exports?
The major export production in Senegal is groundnut. The groundnut area has been affected by the rainfall deficit. And even we have some report from some groundnut producers. They realized that the rain was very late and they decided to plant. And despite the fact they won't have any groundnut production. But they said, yes, but at least we will have some fodder for cattle.
Have you noticed new weather trends in general, or is this year just an anomaly?
That is a very good question. Actually, when you see the Sahel in general and in Senegal, till the 1917, the weather was pretty wet. And but from the 70s to 2000s, it was a kind of dry cycle. And maybe you heard of this very severe drought in all the Sahel in 73, and 10 years later in 83. Now we are in a cycle where it's very different from one year to another year, and it's a very bad time for the plant.
That was Patrick David, a food and security analyst for the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization. He was speaking to Ricky Strayak from Dakar. Every day, one in four South Africans face hunger. The number of children with severe stunting due to malnutrition has increased in the past few years. Yet the international group Oxfam says the problem is absent from public debate in a country that is self-sufficient in food production. As Emily Yap reports from Johannesburg, a lack of education and limited access to affordable, balanced foods are some of the main causes of hunger.
These children eating their morning porridge are not in a school canteen, but in a rehabilitation center for malnourished children. In South Africa, official statistics show almost a quarter of the population faces hunger on a regular basis. The country is considered food secure, but factors such as price inflation and high unemployment prevent some from accessing not only enough food, but also enough quality food. According to Oxfam Rashmi Mistry, a chronic lack of nutrition affects 25% of children with serious consequences.
Stunting and malnutrition starts in the womb. So when mothers don't have enough to eat or don't have the right type of food to eat, then it impacts on the fetus and it starts from there. So if you've got a few rands to spend on food, you're going to buy something that fills you up. And that's usually starches, potatoes or rice or a mealy meal that will fill you up. But those foods have very, very little nutrition.
In the past 6 years, the cost for a basic food basket here increased by more than 40%. To help people be able to afford healthy food, the NGO African Children Feeding Scheme, or ACFS, is teaching adults how to grow their own food. Nosipo Siswene lives on a government stipend of $86 a month to feed her family of five. She says since she started a garden, she saves half of her food budget.
I didn't like gardening before because I didn't understand anything about it. But after I was taught how to garden, I quickly loved it. I'm saving money because I don't have to buy all these veggies anymore. I eat healthy food now because I get them fresh from my garden.
Education on what constitutes a balanced diet is another tool in combating hunger here.
We have three kinds of food. We have the carbohydrates, we have the proteins, and we have the vitamins.
ACFS has been operating here for more than 60 years and provides support to hundreds of families every day. Executive Director Pindele Shalele says the need for its services has not decreased, but donations have.
The need is huge. It's not decreasing. It's huge. We're still proceeding as we use, but in future, if things they don't become better, we'll have to scale it down.
While the right to food is enshrined in South Africa's constitution, it appears not yet to be completely in practice. Emily Yob for VOA News, Johannesburg.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. South African defending champion Stephen Mokoka triumphed at the Shanghai International Marathon in China, setting a course record of 2 hours, 8 minutes and 43 seconds on Sunday. Mokoka improves the course record by 18 seconds. Ethiopian Abraham Cherkos and Kenyan Stephen Chemlani placed second and third, respectively, while Ethiopian Tigista Tufa prevailed in the women's race in a lifetime best of 2 hours, 21 minutes and 52 seconds. What's more, she improved the women's course record by over a minute. Kenyan Caroline Kilel was second, with Ethiopian Miskia Mekonen placed third. Elsewhere, Kenyan Mary Keitani prevailed in the women's race in 2 hours, 25 minutes and 7 seconds at the New York City Marathon in the United States of America on Sunday. Fellow Kenyan Jemima Sumong was runner-up ahead of Portugal's Sara Moreira. Kenyan Wilson Kipsang triumphed in a relatively slow time of 2 hours, 10 minutes and 59 seconds in a tactical men's race. Ethiopia's Lelisa Desisa and Gebregziagba Gebremariam placed second and third, respectively. Meanwhile, here in South Africa, Ethiopian Sentayehu Legese Yinsu won the Soweto Marathon in Johannesburg on Sunday. Lesotho's Motlokoa Nkabutla and Teboho Sello was second and third, respectively, while Ethiopia's Meseret Biru triumphed in the women's race with Kenyan Isabel Jepchumba and Ethiopian Almsehei Kakis finishing second and third. Finally, in football, Algerian hosts Entente Setif were crowned Orange Africa Champions League title holders on Saturday. They held the Democratic Republic of Congo's AS Vita to a 1-1 draw in Setif. Having drawn 2-2 in the first leg in Kinshasa a week ago, Entente Setif win the tie on their away goal rule. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Burkina Faso's army, which seized power on Friday, says it will install a unity government to oversee a political transition spawned by the ouster of longtime President Blaise Compaoré. That's it for this Monday, November 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Marco Oman, along with our engineer Jim Harmon, I'm James Barton in Washington, hoping that you have a productive week.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, we'll look at Zambia's political future following the death of President Michael Sata. The country is expected to hold a presidential election within 3 months. That's next time on VOA Africa.
Sports fans, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. And on Fridays, you can also hear my 30-minute show at 17:30 UTC. On the internet, like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Check voaafrica.com for the addresses and enjoy the show.